Hello, this is Dr. Stephen Nurse, and this is my third and final series on the war in Vietnam, titled, A Letter is a Living Voice. We will be reading letters and documented accounts written by Vietnam veterans. These letters show all the emotion of war, from fear to anger to love and fellowship. These are only the opinions of the writers of the documents and not those of the voice of Vashon or the readers. In addition, while some of the language in the documents may appear to be racially insensitive, it is the actual language of war. It is my opinion that to use the exact language to give the listener a true understanding of the veterans' ratings and their associated emotions is extremely important. In war, we demonize our enemy through our language and our pictures. We make them inanimate, therefore easier to kill. Hello, this is Dr. Steve Nurse, and as I mentioned in the intro, our series name is A Letter is a Living Voice. And we really think that's important to get the actual accounts of the vets that went to Vietnam. The vast majority of the men and women who went to Vietnam was 19 years old. So these were young people. These were people who had experienced many things in life, but certainly not the death and destruction that they experienced in Vietnam, and such a different world from what they were used to. And that's really what we tried to bring out. And we've also included, besides letters, accounts of vets, some poetry, some writings, some descriptions of articles in the paper, specifically the Beachcomber. And I'd really like to thank Mike Suddeth, who did the research and went to the Vashon Library and got all of the articles. And then thanks also to Susan Schreyers, who used her eyes and her brains to try and decipher these articles that were written in microfiche. And that's what the program is about. We were asked, and we are in contact right now with the Library of Congress, who is possibly interested in including our programs, our three series, in the Veterans Memorial and articles back there. So that would be a real honor. Another thing that I just wanted to reiterate is that, again, that this language in some of the letters is not politically correct, but I don't believe in recreating history, and I do believe that that gives us a really, really good sense of what these veterans were feeling. We talked to the veterans when we did our original interviews, and we really looked at what were their experiences going through their first physicals, finding out that they've got their inductive notice, not exactly like a birthday card, and their first impression of Vietnam and landing there. And I think, Rick, you would agree with me that virtually every one of them said what when they landed in Vietnam?
The heat and the smell.
Yes. Yeah, that's it. The heat and the smell. So a lot of consistencies, too. These are numerous and various letters from soldiers to family, friends, and loved ones. We ask them their impressions of where they were in Vietnam and what they thought they were doing here, what they thought the purpose was, and the impressions that they gave us were extremely varied. Some were very patriotic. I think they were all patriotic, but I mean, some wanted to be there, and some certainly didn't want to be there and were very frightened by the experience. We looked at over hundreds of different documents in putting this program together. And so we hope that you enjoy it. We hope that it brings some of those folks closer to you. And I think especially in Vietnam, when I talked to Bruce Hallman, who was kind of Vashon's historian, and asked Bruce about Vashon and folks in the Vietnam War. And at the time of, from 68 to 70, which was when the largest buildup in Vietnam, I think in Tet, the Tet Offensive, was in November of 68. There were, in those 2 years, there were 12 young men from Vashon who were killed in Vietnam. And if you realize the population was about 6,000 at that time on Vashon, or a permanent residence, 12 young men from the high school when the graduating classes were under, certainly under 100, that's a pretty big impact. Let's talk a little bit about letters and why I think that letters are so important. I think we can all remember certain letters we've got from certain people. When I was young, and that's many years ago, but we communicated primarily by letter. Now we communicate by email and telephone. I can tell you when I lived in Ellensburg in 1958, and if we got a telephone call to our home that was long distance, someone in the family had died. You know, you didn't just call people up and talk. And so we communicated by letters. We can remember those special letters. Rick, do you remember any special letters you ever got or anything that...
Well, I get a letter from my girlfriend breaking up with me.
Uh-huh.
That was something you did by letter, not in person if you could avoid it.
Yes, that's right.
It leads to a confrontation later, but...
Yes. Susan's here with us, and we're going to be sharing some of the reading duties. Susan, anything that comes to your mind?
Well, I know that when my then boyfriend was overseas in Vietnam, I had a very close personal relationship with our mailman because that was the high point of my day. I would wait every day for the mail to get there. And they tease me because I'm still like that. I never get anything important in the mail anymore except advertisements, but I still check the mail every day. I wait, has the mail come yet? Has the mailman been here?
You know, I am the same way. And usually right now the mail for me is 4 credit card offers, a couple things for cruises and vacations, at least 5 or 6 things from AARP insurance and all that. But my wife also saved, when we were first dating and She was in Seattle, and I was finishing up school in Ellensburg. I remember writing all these letters to her, and I wrote them on, it was on a brand new kind of paper called onion skin paper that you could erase all your mistakes. And, you know, when I go back and I've read some of these letters, I mean, my face just turns red because I embellished so much stuff, you know, trying to make her feel a little jealous. You know, she was in Mexico on vacation, and so I made up for it. I think that there are there is also something about handwritten items. You know, we really realize that that somebody sat down and put the thought together to write a letter. And it is true emotion. It's not emojis. You know, it is true emotion. And one of the most interesting things that I've ever seen when I took a group of graduate students back to Washington, D.C., to the archives building. And they led us back and looked at the Lewis and the original, Lewis and Clark journals. And I remember thinking, you know, in the early 1800s, 1806 around when they went back there, when Jefferson sent them back there. And to think that Lewis and Clark sat around a campfire at night and were swatting flies and mosquitoes and writing into these kind of leather journals, it just fascinated me. So I think that that's something that is really important about letters. I think it also takes more effort to write a letter. My wife and I still try and write thank you letters for things. We like cards sent to us as opposed to a card that's an email kind of card, you know, that is much more detailed than anything that we would do. And regardless of the words on the page, the effort is there, that people have taken the time to sit down and actually write their thoughts. And I think their emotions are truer when you write, because I think you think about things. As a professor, I had students write emails to me that they would not even come close if they were in my presence and talking to me directly. They would not say, you know, Dr. Nurse, I think you're extremely wrong on this. Or, Dr. Nurse, what are you thinking to give me a C on this paper? And so I really think that when we have time to think about it, our emotions do come out in our letters. I think letters are also used for history, for historical purposes. And that's really what we're doing here. And I also we have talked to so many vets who said they wrote letters and wished they had kept them. Because, you know, as we get older, we don't, you know, our head, which is a pretty complex box of files. Sometimes some of the old files fall behind the file box and we can't remember exactly everything. But I do enjoy, and I enjoy reading biographies of people and those kinds of things. Letters are tangible. Letters we can hold in our hand. We realize that that someone had these letters, and they also wrote them. I remember one of my girlfriends used to always kind of put some kind of a, it was, I think it was Estee Lauder or something. It was the most stinky perfume that I ever had, but I, at least I knew in the letter time what was coming there. And I think also the recipient will thank you or realizes that you have taken the time to do that letter. I think communication is how we're eventually going to save the world. And if we don't communicate, I think that's how we could easily lose it. Anything we do on one side of this planet, and this was a quote from Chief Sealth, maybe not the exact quote, but essentially he said, you know, anything that happens on the world happens to all the children of the world. So we are in a enclosed bubble. Also, letters just take longer to write. And in doing so, we do think about that. I think we can, sometimes when people wouldn't talk to us face-to-face, they'll still read a letter. So those are my thoughts on the letter. And let's start with a letter. And I think what I'd like to do is I will start, and then Susan will, this is these are letters that were written by Chris Gaynor. Chris is a young man who lives on the island and is a Vietnam vet. He also is suffering right now from Parkinson's. And so my best goes out to him. And he's done probably as much as anyone has on the island to support veterans and support veterans who have been exposed to Agent Orange. So what we're going to do, these letters are in a chronological format. And as the letters change, we will go back and forth. Again, this is Steve Nurse, and I'm here with Susan Schreyers, and we are reading letters from veterans about their experience in Vietnam and before Vietnam. The first series of letters we'd like to read, and Susan and I are going to go back and forth on the letters, is from a gentleman named Chris Gaynor. And Chris lives on Vashon Island, was in the service for quite a while, and did some pretty tough duty in Vietnam. And I think he was very typical of most of the young men that were in Vietnam. So I'm going to let Susan start out with the first letter. This is prior to when Chris was actually in the Army. Susan?
Fort Ord, California. Cher Anna. I find myself going to school again. It's not bad. Of all things, I have an aptitude for Morse code. After 9 days of exposure, I'm copying 10 words a minute and shall be sending as many by next week. The course offers, in addition to code, all manners of radio communications. When I finish, I'll be able to read maps and have a working knowledge of the intricacies of pinpointing myself and others on a topographical map, and subsequently breaking the position down into grid coordinates and sending them either by code or by voice. This will be one of my primary functions with the artillery unit to which I'm assigned. I will also have to operate and maintain most of the radios the Army uses. We even spent a week learning to drive the new Army Jeeps and small trucks, which we will be carrying our equipment. Sorry to drag you through all that, but that's what I'm doing, and I've become rather interested in it. After all, under no other circumstances would I have the opportunity or the incentive to learn such things. I went into San Francisco today, and I spent most of the day riding the trolley. However, when I first got off the bus upon arriving in the city, I found myself wandering in the direction of the Civic Center. There's something about the city which excites me tremendously. Particularly in that part of the city, there's a feeling of spaciousness and grandeur which Los Angeles just doesn't contain. While I was taking in all this, I had gone far enough to enter the park in front of the city hall. I was in the middle of an anti-Vietnam War convention of some sort. It wasn't a demonstration, really. Tables had been set up, and just about every unpopular movement was represented. I was in my dress greens, looking very soldierly and out of place. I don't know who felt more awkward, me or them. I wanted to say something, but I was struck dumb. I stood a moment and then walked away. It was one of those moments of inadequacy which will always haunt me. I don't even know how I feel about Vietnam anymore. I'm constantly being told stories and what it's like by men who have been. The stories present such an inconsistent picture that it would be impossible to make a stand on any of them. The one feature which seems to hold true, no matter who you ask, is that the American soldiers are suffering and struggling for something they can't define, but seem to all feel. I've gotten my pictures back from the day I had my camera over there. They came out really well. I'll be coming down a weekend soon, and I'll bring them. I've had quite a bit of practice time, but I'm having trouble finding a place to practice. The barracks is out of the question. Too many radios and related commotion. I may find a solution in the service club. Is Erin still studying code? If she is, when I come down, we'll have to exchange a few messages. Mike's guitar must be almost completed by now, and I hope I get a chance to see it. I've read The Shoes of the Fisherman and shall send it along as soon as possible. Somewhere this novel is a letdown, particularly when I think how excellent The Advocate was. He just doesn't do anything with his most important ideas. Kirill is the character who makes the whole thing well worth reading, however. My peculiar mood at the time of reading may have something to do with my negative reactions to other parts. I look forward to one thing. It overshadows my whole life at this point. I want out of the army and will count the days until I finish my hitch. Perhaps soon I can see you.
Wow. I think that really shows kind of the mixed emotions and mixed feelings that those in the service at that time had. The second letter from Chris is postmarked June 1966. And he writes, this is from Fort Riley, Kansas. He writes, "Dear Anne, your letter was the first I received and certainly the most appreciated. It cheered me considerably at a time when I really needed to be cheered. I've been in the Army 7 weeks, but it seems more like a lifetime. I find myself doing things unconsciously, which only a short time ago would have seemed inconceivable. From complete freedom to none at all has given me much food for thought. We just completed our 2 weeks of training in the field. Some of the things we had to do were as close to hell as I've ever come in a long time. We lived similarly to field mice and bathed from canteens. Despite the hardships, I love this experience as well as almost anything I've ever done. Our encampment was on an open field with trees and green fields as far as the horizon. The country being so flat makes the sky appear unlimited, and in Kansas, always deep blue. I find it quite breathtaking, perhaps, because all of my life, any scenes similar to these have been broken up by the artificial obstacles, buildings. The general attitude of my comrades and myself is that what we are learning right now is more important for practical reasons than it used to be. 90% of the training consists of showing us how to keep alive. I am fairly sure at this time that I will be in a combat medic. If this happens, it will relieve me of having to tear my mind apart to reach a conclusion about what my actions should be when asked to kill. As a medic, I won't be killing anyone and will have the chance to save a few. From the small bits of news I get about Vietnam, I really feel that the only honorable place to be is beneath a saffron robe. I often am hit by the realization that quite possibly as many as a quarter of the men I am training with right now will be either dead or shot up by this time next year. The most horrible thought is that they will have died for the wrong reasons. Is the army softening my head, or is this Spain reincarnated? I've made friends from all the parts of the U.S. I have a friend from New Jersey. He tells me about New York City. The more I talk about things as they are in the East, I realize that I would probably like this country a lot more if I hadn't lived in Southern California all my life. Have you heard from Mark? I hope he is feeding his soul with life before he gets caught as I have. If I could choose a brother, it would be Mike, and Aaron is my choice for a kid sister to be cherished. You, Ian, are forever the queen of my thoughts. You seem to understand who I am, and I know you will understand whatever I've managed to communicate in this letter. Love, Chris. And now, Susan.
This letter is postmarked February 2nd, 1967. Anna, we sighted land early this evening. The wet, hot greenness of Vietnam breaking the monotony of the ocean, which I have lived with for 3 interminable weeks. We are creeping carefully down the coast to make our debarkation point tomorrow morning. I think I hear heavy artillery, but perhaps I am imagining. It looks too lonely and peaceful for the ugliness of howitzers. We stopped in Okinawa for a day last week. My excitement was unbounded at the experience of that first breath of the Orient, that mingled fragrance mixed of the living vegetation, dung of the fields, and the sweat of small, unique egos. I had heard of this phenomenon, but the effect of the perfume is an atmosphere beyond description. I went ashore and traveled by bus for the width of the island, drinking in the fantastic beauty of the countryside. We were supposed to stay on the military base, but I escaped and wandered the whole city, the whole day in the city of Naha, not unlike Mazatlan in its buildings and general atmosphere, yet marvelously new to me in its detail. I found a marketplace that could only exist in one's imagination, a square mile of narrow streets through which no automobiles pass, each stall exhibiting exotic fruits or displays of meat, fish, vegetables to delight the eye and the nose. I found myself walking through what would be considered the poor section, but was as clean and well cared for as the rest of the city. My mere presence caused much giggling and excitement among the children, who were quick to return my smiles. It's darkening now, and the officer of the watch is signaling our escort ship with his lamp. A squadron of jets has just passed very close over us, headed for the mainland. For what task, I don't want to think on. The air is so rich, I feel I could swim through it. There are only a few lights visible on the coast, and I still hear the repeated boom of not too distant guns. Tomorrow we land and meet what is waiting for us. I think I feel fear in myself, and I see it in others. I pray you are all well. Love, Chris.
Wow. Again, I think it's those first impressions and just being in an entirely different world. This next letter is postmarked October 31st. Dear Anna, I've been reading Man. How strange it seems to read of such divine things and have to live under such raw conditions. It sets my own feeling afar from the mode of living. I hardly know whether I will prevail or the army will make a victim of my ideas. I hate the organization, and yet I am on such intimate terms with its working. I move easily within its structure. I've experienced Kansas cold, or I should say a foretaste of such 5 days in the field turned out to be 5 days of frozen ears and toes. During my training, I was amused by the campout spirit, but this was too much like the real thing. The artillery pieces blasted away day and night, and there was much tossing of gas bombs into our camp in the small hours of the morning. I am a radio operator without a radio. Such is the state of affairs in this unit. We have lots of field wire and many small radios, but not the equipment I've trained on. The battery thinks I'm an ammo bearer. The common chief has me as a teletype operator, and the communications officer is getting me a secret clearance so that I can handle crypto material. Mostly, I dust shelves. I mentioned to you once that I hadn't seen much racial tension in the Army. It remains true as far as I've seen. However, I have become more aware of individual comments and feelings among people I work with. I fail to understand how so many men can have a Negro friend whom they pal around with every day by choice, and then among an all-white group make incredibly thoughtless remarks about them niggers. If what I think is the case, and that being they don't see any relationship between this individual and the rest of his maligned race, must they then feel the necessity to make such all-encompassing remarks? The occurrences are not allowed, but rather as confidential insights for the imparting of which I've many times been drawn inside. These are always accompanied by quick perusal of the room. This phenomena remains a mystery to me. This is such a drab place. I've taken to drinking great quantities of beer. There is only one town nearby, Junction City. No need to spend any time there, as if everything is nauseous about the Midwest. Kansas is a dry stale, so it isn't even possible to sit on a bar stool with a glass of scotch. I play my guitar, which has turned out to be a really good instrument, when the mood takes me and I read. In all fairness, I must admit, the turning of the leaves and the autumn air is very becoming and pleasant, and I am looking forward to the first snow. I hope that Jimmy will find his right direction on the induction issue, and I am even more hopeful that he will be spared any confrontation, whatever, with these people. I would guess that Mark is getting close to this very confrontation. Mike can certainly continue to develop artistically for several years without any much worry. I send my love to Aaron. And again, I think this starts to look at those issues, those racial issues. Again, I apologize for the language there, but it is the language of the letter. And now, Susan has, I think, the final letter from Chris.
Anna, dear, I don't know where to begin after so many months. However, I've begun, haven't I, in this wretched green ink. Some things have definitely happened since I last wrote. I've been put into a different unit and spent a couple of strenuous months since learning the rules of this nasty little war firsthand. It's not so simple, Anna. For each person, there's a totally different viewpoint. Each day shows a different side. God, if I know what the answer is, I just want to be quit of it. The details are ugly, and I hope I can talk to you sometime about it and put it all on the line for inspection and introspection. These Vietnamese are the most unwarlike people imaginable, and yet from the many years of war, they've learned to take events of violence as calmly as their morning tea. I've known some really beautiful girls, and it tears my heart out to realize deep down they probably hate me, and justifiably. I am the foreign invader. I've been reading Molière. He gives me a great uplift. My mother got me a whole stack of his plays in paperback. It's quite true that all comedy after him is merely slightly different treatment of his comic invention. I've also got some man. I think you know that he is among my all-time favorites. What of all my friends? Norman, the Z's, Bernie? Life is so short. I promise to write more soon. I miss you terribly, Anna. Love, Chris.
And that concludes our first series of letters. I hope you enjoyed it, and we will see you for the next episode.